WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome in on this Wednesday night, Tuscaloosa, to WVUA 90.7 FM, The Capstone, where we have yet another episode of Student Section MLB. I am Will Miller, once again joined tonight by Luke Torrey
and Carson Keel.
And we have got a great show planned for you all for our second go-around here on the air, and we're going to start things off with a brand new segment where we bring you up to date with the happenings around the league over the last few days. It's going to be Baseball Bulletin, and tonight is going to be the first edition of that, so let's get into some of that.
All right, so a couple of the news from the past few days. Today, Vlad Jr. hit his 100th career home run, youngest Blue Jay to do that in franchise history. Take a shift to the Seattle Mariners. Julio Rodriguez reaches 25 home runs and 25 stolen bases. Third rookie to accomplish that feat, joining Chris Young in 2007 and Mike Trout in 2012. Justin Verlander will be back in the Astros rotation on Friday after being placed on the 15-day IL with a calf injury. That'll be a good pickup back for them. And last night, Aaron Judge hits home runs number 56 and 57. In a 7-6 win over the Red Sox in 10 innings.
And that was a dang game, too. Not even just with him hitting the home runs, but he is getting ever closer, and we will get into that later on in the show, to the American League home run record, which a lot of people think that he's going to get. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. just today, 100 home runs. He's been playing for 3.5 years.
I mean,
that's crazy.
He's got to be like one of the best, like, straight, like, into the league people, right? I mean, can we think of anyone that's just been hot ever since they call up? I mean, I can't think of one.
And he's only really gotten better.
Yeah.
Because it was, I mean, they were still on the edge of a rebuild kind of when he was first called up. They were in the last, you know, season of that rebuild process. And I guess some thought they might be about to dive back into that when Montoyo got fired. But it's been anything but. They're likely to get a wild card spot. But this accomplishment today for him, it kind of makes you wonder what it could lead to in the, you know, let's say he's got 15 years left in his career, hopefully. What does he have left in him?
23 years old, 23 years, 182 days. That's the youngest in Blue Jays history, as I mentioned. He's got a lot left in him, I can assure you that.
I mean, and plus, I mean, speaking of career links, I mean, they're just getting larger and larger and larger, and like, if we look overall, because, I mean, medicine's getting better. I mean, we know how to train guys now. It's not just like, go have a scotch and a ribeye and then you're good. It's, all right, you're going to eat this much, and then, all right, we're going to do this much exercise. I mean, we could sit, theoretically see him playing till, in baseball, you can have a relatively long career, 40, 45. I mean, that's very much possible.
And it'll only improve as he gets older.
Right.
So it could be that he's playing when he's 44, 45 years old.
And look at the young guys he's got around him still. They'll be with him the whole way through. Biggio, Bichette, doesn't end.
Well, Aaron Judge with his two home runs. I already mentioned that right when you got done reading the rundown, but
two clutch,
like,
home runs, yeah, too. Tied the game both times.
Yeah, that kind of deserves some time of day before we get into another home run segment this week. I mean, he's now right there. To have multiple home runs in a game definitely helps your cause, it goes without saying. But in a game like that, it just shows you not only he can, you know, he's got the numbers, but also the clutch gene, which is another reason why the Yankees need to not let him walk.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm kind of taking this off the Judge train for a second. Look at also Mike Trout with his home run streak. I mean, I think last night it hit 7 games in a row with a home run. I mean, it's really strange. We're actually seeing, like, these home run, I guess, developed, like, you know, guys. I mean, Mike Trout's forever. I mean, probably one of the best baseball players that we can think of at the moment. I mean, anyone who says the opposite's crazy. Just because he plays with the Angels, a team that has had dysfunction when it comes to becoming solid, doesn't mean he's a bad player. Just, man, it just really overlooked also, just because the Angels are just having a really bad streak of seasons.
7 years in a row of sub-500 was locked up today for the Angels. Mike Trout did not homer again, so he did not tie the all-time record, which was 8 games in a row. People had eyes on that. Joey Votto almost got to it last season. He came within, you know, 3 feet of it last season, if we remember. And so Mike Trout will not be tying or breaking it at this point. There's still some games left. He could do it. The Angels, though, it has been ridiculous how they fail in the free agent category. Just every single free agent that they have signed that I can think of off the top of my head, other than Shohei Ohtani, has been a total flop.
Well, I think it's a mixture of bad luck, and I don't want to say bad management, because it feels like you go through and you get the new GMs, it's they still have that same bad luck. It's just I don't know how to describe it. It just feels like the Angels kind of in, like, they're hitting potholes even when they're trying to avoid them.
Well, while we're talking about Mike Trout, let's get into some Players of the Week action, American League and National League. Still a lot going on as the postseason chase heats up. Guys, who do we have as our Players of the Week?
I've got Aaron Judge. 10 for 20, two home runs yesterday, but had none before that. But that showed that he's truly an all-around hitter. He got his average up to 310, which is third in the AL behind Luis Urias and Xander Bogaerts at 319. And he's got a legitimate shot at the Triple Crown now. He's leading in home runs by 22 and RBIs by 12, and he's 9 points behind Bogaerts and Urias for batting average.
What about in the National League?
National League, I have Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman, last seven games, hitting 440, 11 hits, 3 home runs, 7 RBIs, and 6 walks, slugging 880 over that span and only 25 at-bats.
I'm going to disagree on National League. I agree with you on American League. I think Michael Harris, the second, should be looked at here. I mean, 3 home runs in the past 7 games, 6 runs total, 9 hits. About, you know, it's average about 346. I just, look, he's right now probably the greatest Braves rookie that we're looking at in the long term. So please, please give the man his respect.
Well, my Player of the Week in the American League is going to be Mike Trout. The 7 games in a row with a home run kind of speaks for itself. When healthy, he is the best player in the game. He's undisputed 5-tool. Judge is there too, but Mike Trout, undisputed 5-tool player, best of the game. He is my American League Player of the Week. National League Player of the Week, I thought long and hard, guys, today about whether I could strong-arm Robbie Grossman into this because he has been great at racking up RBIs for the Atlanta Braves. And
well, he's had also one of the greatest career changes since the trade from Detroit.
And that leads me to believe that the teams at the winter meetings, the other 29 teams apart from Atlanta, should collectively decide that if they have a guy batting 185, don't send him to Alex Anthopoulos. But unfortunately, I couldn't make myself do it. So my National League Player of the Week is going to be Freddie Freeman. I'm going to agree with Luke on that one. He's hitting for power really well. He had a stretch right after the All-Star break where he was too, but now he's doing it again. And if they have his bat getting as hot as it can be heading into the postseason, then that's that's why they paid him. That's why they lured him away from Atlanta, even though we know that maybe his agent didn't tell him about all the offers, but salty Braves fan talk, excuse that.
Well, actually, did you see the update about that?
I did. I don't buy it.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp. I feel like what happened was probably got the story a little too early from the Braves side. I still think that there was something there. This is my personal opinion, so please don't go after and sue us. But it's too weird of a story, and it just everything felt too off about that situation. So that's just my take, though.
Well, I mean, speaking of the Dodgers, who are a team that I will openly admit I strongly dislike, they did clinch the National League West officially. So they have locked up a playoff spot. We've seen some of the league's worst get eliminated last few days. Saw, you know, the Tigers bow out, A's bow out, Nationals were the first, to the shock of nobody. The Dodgers are in. It's expected. I mean, they are a juggernaut. It's expected they're going to be there at the end. And, I mean, this doesn't shock anybody. So let's kind of put a spin on this. How do you guys think this looks for the rest of the Dodgers regular season? Do you think they're kind of going to put it in cruise control the rest of the way? I mean, there is still seeding at play.
I thought it was funny. Freddie Freeman got his first day off of the year the day after they clinched. So, I mean, I could see them going both ways. They could rest guys on any given day. They have so much depth that they could rest their big guys like Mookie Betts and Justin Turner and Freddie Freeman and still go out there and compete and win. So I think they don't want any injuries going into the playoffs. I'd be leaning towards seeing that a little bit more, probably resting one guy at a time, this and that, just being sure no injuries going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that situation happen. I think when it gets a little closer to kind of like, all right, we have an amount of games where we can lock up spots, I think we'll see guys like, you know, they'll probably kind of bring them back out a little bit just to confirm that if they could have the chance of getting the best spot, they're going to try to get the best spot they can. Everyone wants that number one seed. But as soon as they probably, if they can get that seed locked up, then we'll probably see some guys go back into kind of hibernation until the playoffs.
Now, we were discussing before the show, there was a bit of a, we'll call it a circumstance, where Major League Baseball had talked about the Dodgers being the champions of the West a few days ago. That wasn't actually accurate. So myself, my co-host, we've found an explanation about that. Part of what the league has changed this season with the addition of the wild card, the expanded postseason and spots and things of that nature is there's no more game 163s anymore. So if somebody were to tie at the end of the division, would have played off for the playoff spot. Well, that's no longer going to happen. So now you have things like tiebreaker rules. So basically what the situation was, the Dodgers are the winningest team in the National League. And that somebody had said it was mathematically possible for the Dodgers, and the example they used was the Brewers, to finish with identical records. And so that would mean there would be a tiebreaker between the Brewers and the Cardinals, and then the Cardinals and the Dodgers, assuming equal records for the Dodgers and the Brewers, would be for the third wild card spot. And the Cardinals would have won the season series. The Dodgers would lose out on the playoffs. So, now, we know that can't happen anymore because the Dodgers won, right. But that's sort of a fun thing to kind of mull over. I don't know if I did a very good job explaining that.
But it was basically the idea is the league did not do their full homework on this. It was kind of a situation where they got caught with their pants down on the math. And
happens to the best of us, Carson.
Yeah, it does. Now, let me add also, this came from r/baseball on Reddit, which is the place of the most fervent baseball fans you can find. These are people who like run stats for fun on players. So, and I'm not taking like they put it into a calculator. I'm talking about like they create their own formulas and try to make sure they can get everything mathematically correct. So this is kind of a situation where I think no one thought they would actually go that far to figure out if they were correct. So it's a funny look, but everyone knew the Dodgers were going to get clinched in somehow.
Yeah, there was no way this was going to happen. For our listeners out there that maybe aren't as into baseball, we thank you for joining us, obviously. And also, that wasn't feasible to happen. It would have been fun. I mean, as an avid Dodger, we'll say strong disliker for radio purposes, it would have been great to see that unfold. And we'll get to the Brewers at the tail end of the show. We do have a talking point to get into on some teams. And I'd love to see the Dodgers miss the playoffs, but everybody and their mother knew it wasn't going to be this year.
Oh, yeah.
They have paid to load that team from 1-9. They've had players step up that maybe you weren't even expecting to. You know, they did have Kershaw hurt at one point in the year. They've had pitching step up. They did last year, too, with Julio Urias being a 20-game winner. I don't know if anybody saw that coming. The fact is, they're just a machine, and they're one of the best teams in baseball, like it or not. And that's not to say that they're invincible, because they're not.
Something to look at, too, with the Dodgers, Kershaw having an incredible year. 2.44 ERA and 174 ERA plus. I didn't know that until I saw that today. I thought he was pitching like he was pitching well, but I did not know he was pitching like Cy Young caliber year.
Makes the Rangers mad, doesn't it? They thought they were going to have an inside shot at him because he's from around there. And yeah. Now you got the Rangers that are going to be doing a managerial search, which we broke down all that on last week's show, actually. So take a listen to that on the Voices website if you want to hear our rundown of the Major League Baseball managerial search. Like usual, it's sure to be a carousel, a lot of names floating around and different things like that. We're going to go ahead and take our first break, but stay tuned right here on WVUA 90.7 The Capstone for even more baseball right after this.
WVUA FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back into your student section MLB here on 90.7 FM, The Capstone. And we're back here from our first break with a very interesting topic of discussion. There has been some things floated around about this really in the last couple of weeks. Today it's finally come to fruition, and that is that minor league baseball players have officially gone under the umbrella of the Major League Players Union.
Yes, it actually is really interesting. So this, I want to say, a week and a half ago is when the news first came out that the minor league players were going to be going in and kind of saying, hey, we want to join this umbrella. Again, minor league baseball has basically been under the microscope ever since kind of COVID and the famous contraction of 60 teams since basically 2020 in general. So seeing this feels like a conclusion to a lot of things, especially just how and finally that there is some stuff really starting to happen for these players. I mean, everyone's heard the horror stories of minor league baseball, especially if you have a bad team. I mean, as someone who who's from Huntsville, I mean, the end of the Huntsville Stars is something that's widely known. I mean, before Joe Davis today is getting renovated, I mean, it was probably the worst stadium of all of baseball. It was a dump. I mean, I could talk about the end of that place, but players are finally getting treated basically as equals to the major leagues, which they always have been, besides in pay and how they were treated. So it's just a great thing to see that this is happening, and these players are going to get some more help, especially just financially and with housing especially.
Right, and the union will represent more than 5,000 minor league players, and the MLBPA has also indicated that it will bargain half of players from the Dominican Summer League, so that's something interesting to look into.
Okay, yeah, I didn't even know about that part. So, yeah, I mean, again, this is basically a giant shift. I'm really interested to see what's going to happen next season, especially because that's when we're going to start to see the effects. Are we going to see less games? Are we going to see more games? Are we going to see more breaks? Is the All-Star game going to come back for each respective minor league itself? I mean, we're kind of going to see, I think, some shifts, especially in how things are overall done.
Also because minor league always tests major league rules before they actually do it. You saw with the shift.
The runner on second and extras was the big one, too.
The shift being banned, the pitch clock. I'm sure that now they don't need to really be the test dummy anymore. They could have their own rules as well.
Well, that's actually, I'll correct that. That's somewhat true and not true at the same time, because the MLB has actually had a really good relationship with the Atlantic League of Professional Baseball. And like, that's where the robo ump's been tested. I believe that's now been being tested in some of the minor leagues. I know runner on second was something there. I know stealing first was something that was tested in the Atlantic League first. So, would testing start? I think we'll still see some testing happen in the minor leagues, just being as a way for, oh, it's development, so we're testing our new rules on the development players, so if they use them in the majors. But yeah, I do think we'll start to see the idea of minor league baseball is treated as a test. It's not. It's not now starting to be seen as what it is. It's development, yes, but it's still baseball first, and it's minor in the league, but still professional baseball.
I think those are great points, and I think that we've seen some changes even in how the minor leagues do things since COVID. We've seen teams start to pay for housing, give more housing stipends, things like that.
Well, I can tell you exactly how that happened is the players had an entire group kind of formed after seeing what happened with
the contract. And there was a former pitcher in the Angels system, actually, that was a big part of that. His name's Kieran Lovegrove.
Yep.
And I read the ESPN article on him.
And that was actually about my team with the Roxy Trash Pandas. And now I would like to say I've had some former contact with people there. I think some of that was at fault of the Angels organizations itself. It wasn't really the Trash Pandas organization's fault. They just kind of had to deal with what they were given. It was bad hand. So I do want to point that there. That's just kind of a mixture of my own biases and what I've learned. So I will say that. But this is something that's a little close to home for me, so it's great to see this happen.
I got a question for you guys, though. Do we see a difference, a change in minor league baseball players' pay going forward now with this?
I think that at first, next couple of years, we're probably going to see marginal increases. I don't know if that will be sustained, especially the way the economy is now. I mean, the amount of situations you could apply that phrase to is a lot. But for this, got to add it in. So we don't really know what that's going to look like. I think, like I said, just marginal increases the next couple of years. Hopefully that persists. And maybe even there's, a boom at some point down the line. But I don't really know how we're going to – like Carson said, we're not going to see the effects of all this immediately. We're going to have to – wait on all this to play out for at least a year or two. And I think that after that time has passed, we're going to have a much more clear understanding of the long-term impacts on everything, not just salary.
Yeah, I mean, it's speaking of salary, none of these guys are going to be paid $1 million. I think that we need to be realistic about that. Would it be nice? Yeah.
I'd like to be paid $1 million. Yeah. I don't know about you guys,
but I think the idea is probably we're probably going to see guys being paid around $50,000 a year. I think that's a very fair estimate. Now I'm thinking more in perspective because I'm used to double A ball. That's kind of like the baseball I've grown up on minor league wise my entire life. So could we see a tiered system where, all right, let's say you're in single A, you get paid this much. High A, you get paid a little more. Double A, you get paid this much. Triple A, that's a weird mix because you're seeing a mix of players who played for a while, players who are getting ready to get called up, players who are kind of on a two-way system. So
rehab.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like its own little bubble with Triple A. But from single A, include even rookie ball, you're kind of going to see, like, I think a tiered system of pay where it's probably going to be fairly high.
I think I agree with that. I think at the very – and we already kind of see that,
yeah,
you know, right now. But I think that gap will be a lot more pronounced. Yeah. I think that's one consequence that we can say for sure right now is going to be there. The gap between – we'll use an example. The gap between a AAA guy and somebody playing rookie ball is going to be astronomical, which it – already is by conventional standards, but it's just going to be more apparent as that money continues to grow. People are going to see more of that, and I think that's probably the one thing we can be sure about, or one of the one things we can be sure about right now.
Yeah, no, I will say I do have some concern with this. This is, I think we are going to see some shifts. I'm really concerned for these small market teams. Like I said, with rookie ball, you are playing in really small towns. That's basically towns that are just right on the map and just happen to be luckily right next to a major city most of the time. So that's something that I think I'm kind of worried about. Kind of an example I'm going to kind of give, just kind of double A that I'm thinking of. Pearl, Mississippi, a.k.a. Mississippi Braves, a.k.a. that's Jackson, Mississippi. I don't know. I mean, the Braves, yes, they do make a lot of money, and the Braves own the team, so that's a good indication. But, I mean, imagine if you're paying a roster, or let's say each guy is getting $50,000 minimum. I mean, that's again, baseball roster is about 23 players usually. Again, you do the math. That's not exactly cheap. So I do wonder if these more family-owned minor league teams that just deal with affiliations only and are not owned by a large group or owned by a team outright, could we see people kind of cash out and say, all right, we can't pay these payrolls anymore, it's too much?
I think we could see that. It's going to probably depend on the team. Some ownerships might be able to or willing to foot that.
Yeah.
And some, even more certainly, some will not be. So, I think that's another potential long-term consequence. We will see more of that as more of these changes start to settle in. So I don't think the full impact of that's going to be apparent right now. Some of it, I think, will be coming out soon. But it's so new right now. This is, for context, you know, this was hours ago that this was officially announced.
Yeah.
So this
has it's not even officially announced. It's Jeff Passan, which is, I mean, his words is as good as the Bible most of the time. But still, it's like, okay, what do we have here? You know, it's just like, no official announcement, but probably that's coming tomorrow at this point. So yeah, we're kind of sitting on the idea of a lot of hypotheticals of, like, who knows, and I'm seeing a lot of good, but like I said, I'm kind of concerned what's going to happen with the more family owned teams.
All right, I'd like to maybe take a shift here into live scores around the league. So Mariners on top of the Padres 6-1, that's final. Giants beat the Braves 4-1. Rockies shut out the White Sox 3-0. Astros on top of the Tigers 2-1. Guardians beat the Angels 5-3. Pirates crushed the Reds 10-4. And to live games, we got the Yankees, Red Sox scoreless in the top of the fifth. Phillies are on top of the Marlins, top of the sixth, 2-1. Orioles are down 2-1 to the Nationals in the top of the sixth. Blue Jays on top of the Rays 4-0. In the top of the fifth, and the Cubs are beating the Mets 6-1 in the top of the fourth.
Woo.
Royals down 3-0 to the Twins in the top of the third. Brewers tied with the Cardinals 1-1 in the bottom of the second, and the Athletics and Rangers are scoreless after one. One thing I want to talk about with the Brewers-Cardinals game, Adam Wainwright, Yadier Molina, 325 regular season starts as a battery. That's a record that just set just now.
Wow.
And an Aaron Judge update. He has not homered yet today.
not yet.
His last at-bat was right before we came in here and went live, and he walked. which shouldn't shock anybody. Yeah. So we will keep you in tune with those games and those happenings throughout the show. Also, got to make sure we keep you posted on what's going on, especially with all this where we are in the season. But in these last, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes before break, let's kind of talk about this, because we've talked about division races so much, and we're going to do it more as the show goes on. But these games between teams that aren't playing for anything, do you guys see value in the potential of, I mean, obviously we're going to see prospects get called up. We're going to see guys play for the first time. But past that, what is the value in having those games? Like, say the Athletics, you know, played the Nationals. They're not. They're both playing right now.
It's practice. It's just pure practice. I mean, you take that idea of, okay, think of it as basically like a joint, like NFL preseason is a joint practice where, look, we got to keep you guys in shape. Everyone else is playing. Yeah, we're playing for nothing, but you call it moral victories, I guess. But if you win a series, still. But I guess no. If you're playing higher teams that have locked in for a spot or playing for seeding, you go in and you try to, your idea of a victory is, you know, making them lose a couple spots. That's basically all you have.
And you're gonna see more of that, but just hypothetically, if two teams winning 50 games played each other, I mean, and I think that's just part of the game. You know, we touched on that last week. We talked about Shohei Ohtani being in the mix for American League MVP, where at this point in the year, as good as he has been and will be, he's not playing meaningful games. We already said at the top of the show, the Angels, 7 straight years today of under 500 baseball for the year. And as good as he is, how can you give a guy that award when he's not playing to win anything?
Listen, yeah, I think Shohei Ohtani is the most valuable baseball player on planet Earth, but Aaron Judge is winning the 2022 American League MVP. I don't know how else to explain it. It's taking a historical season on top of a typical Shohei Ohtani season. It's just insane to think about, but Aaron is 100% winning it.
And even if Judge didn't hit 62, how do you not give it to the guy that's close got to winning the 60 triple, home runs?
Triple crown, and 22 home runs on Mike Trout.
And is playing meaningful baseball to boot. The Yankees are going to be in contention for a World Series in October. The Angels are out of contention for a World Series in July. I mean, I kind of feel like we don't assess that enough as sports fans, not even just baseball. But the reality is there are teams and there are things, there are coaching changes and things like that that just don't seem to be based on a team's performance in the win column. I've never understood that. To me, winning is the bar. Success is the bar. And that's the measuring stick that you want to use. Obviously, there are players that are better than most of the guys around them. There are teams that are better or worse than their record. But to me, the buck stops at the win. You know, the win-loss column, and I just, you know, I know that Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani are two of the best players. Nobody's going to dispute that. But you kind of have to ask yourself at this point in the year, what does it matter that they are? They're playing like it, and they are, but it's not affecting October for them. Might be able to do it for other teams, like Carson said, but they could win out, and they're not making the playoffs.
And it's a good sign for the Yankees that guys behind Judge are starting to hit more. You see Giancarlo Stanton, 2 home runs in the last week. It's good to see him get going. Gleyber Torres cleared the bases in the top of the 10th last night against the Red Sox. It's just good to see that if you're a Yankee fan, that guys behind Aaron Judge are hitting, so that you can't just walk Judge to face them now.
I was hoping to work in my twice a week Cliff Kingsbury should have never been hired by the Cardinals at some point in that, but this is a baseball show.
As I say that, Giancarlo Stanton strikes up.
Dang. What is it, still the 5th?
Top of the 5th, Judge just hit a single, but yeah, 2 outs, 2 runners on.
Doesn't add.
Who's up?
Gleyber Torres, 2-for-2 in this game.
Oh. Well, maybe he can make something happen.
Well, I guess I'm just kind of thinking about it, just something I've thought about, you guys. I mean, MVP is basically the idea of, all right, you've taken your team into meaningful baseball territory. That's the issue. And that's why MVPs are technically flawed in every single way. It's going to be, all right, who took their team to the World Series? Who took their team to the playoffs in an impossible situation? It's not about the regular season, really. Let's be honest. It's about what's after the regular season. And
if you're not playing in that, then
yeah. So it sucks to say that, because, I mean, we can already probably think about the time our team's missed the playoff, and we feel like our guy is probably the one more valuable than some other you probably think scrub from another team that just happened like win a playoff series. But it's just like that's the thing. That's going to be the fault always of an award, especially in sports. It's more of a postseason award than it is a regular season award.
Yeah, and I feel that way as well. I mean, and there are obviously awards for that. Yeah. There's postseason MVP awards at all rounds, which usually are given pretty well. You don't have a lot of controversy in those at times. But I don't know. I don't vote in that. I don't have a say in that. Some years that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's my soapbox for this segment. Well, we're going to take you to our second break, and then when we come back, we're going to update you more on the league. We're going to talk once again about playoff races and some interesting things that have come to pass since our last show. Keep it here on 90.7 FM, The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back into your student section MLB show here on 90.7 FM, The Capstone. And as promised, we are going to come out of this break with some MLB playoff races. But first, we've had a development in the Yankees-Red Sox game. We were at a deadlocked 0-0 tie. That was until Gleyber Torres did something really, really fun.
He hit a Little League home run, a single to right field, and a throw by Verdugo a little bit offline. But then their catcher, Connor Wong, made a throwing error to right field that went all the way to the wall. And Gleyber came all the way around to score all three runs, score. Yankees take a 3-0 lead in the bottom of the fifth.
So that game, with the Red Sox defense being what it is, we can safely say it's close to out of hand.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, the Red Sox have just not been a strong defensive team these last few years, ever since they won that World Series. But now straight into business. The division races are still just as interesting as they were last week. We talked about the Mets and the Braves, so we'll start with that again. That gap, the Mets are losing 6-1 right now to the Chicago Cubs. I think that's actually in Queens, too. Brutal.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Now that game obviously far from over, a lot of ball left, but is it one game now? The
one
Braves
game.
Lost today,
one
so
game.
It's a full one game that the Braves are back at the Mets in the National League East. And the Mets have been, like the Braves, alternating wins and losses. The Braves lost the last two games against the Mariners, including the one on Sunday that they just gave away because Kenley Jansen does not got it anymore. But now, and then they now have lost two to the Giants. They lost two in a row. Did they lose two?
That game was crazy.
The Mariners
against
won?
The Mariners. Yeah, that really showed. Hey, I said it last week. Dark horses, the Mariners. They got fight. They got pitching. They got young guys with a lot of energy and a lot of
underrated bullpen. Also,
excitement to get into the playoffs. Like Julio Rodriguez, 21-year-old, just going absolutely berserk.
Yep.
And it's we do have the five game. Is it a five? Is it a five game series?
Five game series.
The Mets.
Yes.
Because they already had one this year. Also.
Yeah.
And so it's another five-game series right at the end of September. And the running belief is this, that series is going to decide who wins the National League East. And that's what we were talking about last week on the show. We're talking about it again. That's in Atlanta, though.
Yes. I mean, look, this series is going to, barring the Mets or the Braves just going on a terrible losing streak, which is possible. There's things. This is probably going to be the determining series on how things are going to go because it's their second to last series. I think they only have – I think both teams have a three-game series against – I think Mets have Nationals, Braves have Miami.
The Mets got four against the Pirates right after this Cubs game, and then they got three against the Brewers, three against the Athletics, two against the Marlins, one against the Braves.
And the Pirates have given Mets problems this season.
And
so,
the Dodgers.
Yeah.
It's actually a three-game series against the Braves.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I thought so.
Somebody has a five-game series. I think it's the Rays it's and somebody. Rays and Yankees,
I think it
right?
might be Yankees,
is it?
Rays. Let
okay.
me double check. Okay.
I think, yeah, because I remember there was a five-game series last week on the show we talked about. I think that's it now that I get to it.
But still, that Mets-Braves series is probably going to be determining how the National League playoffs are going to look. Just, again, barring, what seems impossible, we're kind of in, like, a wait-and-see mode for what it's going to look like. Again, there's a scenario where this, like, the Mets and Braves could be tied for the NL East at the end of the season. Because
we bring back the bad math of tiebreaker rules.
But it's crazy. Look, we're kind of in like crazy mode right now when it comes to how everything's is, because who would have thought? I mean, I was someone who was a little down on the Mets because, I mean, me or Braves fan, it felt like for the past 5 years, the Mets are back, baby. The Mets are going to do the thing. They're going to win a World Series, and then they would lose. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I think that the Mets are a strong playoff team, whether they make it to the wild card or the division victory, which I hate to have that conversation, but they got good pitching. That's where it starts in the postseason. The Braves have had trouble with Mets pitching this year. I remember the big series in Atlanta back in mid-July, and Scherzer was on the bump against Freed game one, and Scherzer went 7 shutout innings. And that was a brilliant performance. It was his first day off the IL, if I'm not mistaken. Not his first day, but his first start off the IL at that time. So that was, it was not encouraging if you're a Braves fan, but that's a big part of why the Mets are here. That's what's bringing them to the dance, not to mention the fact that they became the Oakland A's East Coast in free agency this past offseason. I would have said this past winter, but obviously we had the lockout.
Yeah.
So that series, big deal. Knew it was going to be. And that's going to result in Truist Park. You know, they're going to pack the yard for 3 days, and that's going to be something that's going to be really exciting, no matter which team you're a fan of. But there are, you know, 5 other divisions in the league. The AL East, where is that gap now?
Between 6 games. Yankees have a 6-game lead. The magic number is down to 15 now. Well, if they hold on here, it'll be down even more. But right now, the Yankees have a 6-game lead on Toronto and 6.5 on Tampa Bay.
Okay, so, well, it looks like Tampa Bay, because Tampa Bay did lose today.
They're just beating. I love it. Toronto and Tampa Bay are beating up on each other in this series. The only way this goes bad for the Yankees is if one of the teams just takes 2 in a row against the other.
As Luke said, Tampa Bay lost today, so that big series we're talking about at the top of this segment, this 5-game series between the Yankees and the Rays, will lose its importance as the Rays continue to drop games.
Tampa Bay's down 4-0 to the Blue Jays in the bottom of the 6th.
Oh, okay. So they lost. My bad. And it's interesting because you're still probably going to see 2 American League East teams in that wild card, the Blue Jays and the Rays. Maybe they'll play each other. And so that's another thing the Yankees might like, watching the division teams play each other. You have a chance to get a great feel for your divisional opponents of the year. You play, 18 to 20 games, depending on circumstances, weather happens, things happen. But you have about 20 games against your divisional rivals each per year. So the Yankees aren't going to be unfamiliar with whatever team they face if it's out of the East. But there's also the other side of the coin. These are 2 very good ball clubs, and they're going to be familiar with the Yankees.
Yeah.
So that it's still going to be a tough ask on both sides.
Today, Houston would get the 1, Yankees would get the 2, and then Seattle and Toronto would play each other to then face Houston. Tampa Bay and Cleveland would face each other to face the Yankees in the second round.
I mean, let's go and talk about that AL Central quick. You brought up Cleveland. I mean, I would not call the AL Central exactly closed up yet for Cleveland, because the White Sox, have they been great in the past few weeks? Yeah, that's debatable.
Relative to the rest of the year, yes.
Yeah. They're somewhat getting things together where they are 4 games behind Cleveland, 7 games behind the wild card spot. I mean, the impossible has happened before when it comes to these spots. Cleveland, they are on a 6-game win streak, though, but the AL Central, I would say, is not exactly closed up yet. The weakest division in baseball is still open for takers.
Yes, I agree with you. White Sox play the Guardians on Thursday, which is tomorrow, for a 1 game. It's a makeup from August 21st. But then they go to Detroit for a 3-game series, then back home to face the Guardians for a 3-game series. And then they stay home and the Tigers come to them again. So they got Tigers for 6 games and Guardians for 4 in the next week and a half. That they could cover a lot of ground, make a lot of ground.
They can.
And with Tony La Russa out of the picture, I mean, I doubt he even returns to managing, whether it be this year or beyond. We talked about that also last week. But, I mean, the White Sox, believe it or not, they are still alive. Guys, they are still alive. And there is a very realistic possibility that they could make it into the playoffs as a division champion. And from there, they could change a lot of narratives about where things have been. And even after last year when they had just a horrible showing in the playoffs, there's no 2 ways about it. they can set the course for a new era. This season doesn't have to necessarily be just an, oh, well, we sucked. We weren't supposed to, but we did. Let's just kind of lick our wounds. You're now looking at that because they've gotten a lot of wins and they've been going on a good stretch. Like I said, relative to the rest of the year, this is the best they've had.
Right? Yeah.
And it's without Tony La Russa on the sidelines. I still think the division is going to go to the Guardians. Twins have fallen off. Twins are below 500 now, I believe.
No, they're right at 500 still.
Okay. So they're not getting it, don't think, and they never had the pitching anyway.
Yeah.
As we've said, that's – and we'll get into the technical stuff about that as we approach closer to postseason in about a month. Really less than a month. Get excited.
Yeah.
All right, I'd like to, you know, talking divisions, take a shift into a new segment we're going to do every week called Done Not Done. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm going
to
name –
thank you to Luke's dad for the name suggestion.
I'm going to name a team and see you guys – I want you guys talk thoughts on if they're done or not done.
Yeah.
We just talked Red Sox. All right. Baltimore.
Done. Done. Been done for about 2 weeks.
Yeah. That AL East, it's murderer's row when it comes to teams. They had a good run. They look good. Still a few years away from the playoffs.
And it's not a few years, but I mean – and I do want to kind of disagree with what you said because – there is so much to be excited about, and fans are going to be upset because they were in it, you know, through most of August. They're going to be upset they didn't make it.
Well, here's the reason why I say they're a few years away. AL East is just a crazy division. If they were in the AL Central, or
they would go this year.
Yeah, they would. They would. I mean, they'd probably be locked up.
They probably have a magic number like eight by now.
It's just that they're in a tough division where they have two teams that are willing to pay for their wins. They have two teams that are willing to develop their own wins. And it always feels like the Baltimore's kind of the odd bird out. So
nice.
Yeah. Right.
Did you do that on purpose?
Yes.
All right. Milwaukee.
Done.
Done. That team's gone down the drain.
Same timetable, about 2 weeks.
Two games back.
Although it may have seemed that Josh Hader, getting rid of him, may have been a good idea. We thought it was terrible when they first
looked horrible.
He has had like a 15.5 ERA since he joined the Padres, and that's not. I mean, if there are any San Diego fans out there listening, I'm just sorry. That's all you can say. Yeah, I just Milwaukee doesn't have the consistent offense, and it just depends on who shows up. They need Devin to show up. That's a big piece that they didn't have last season. And yeah, only a couple of games out. I think the Cardinals, like last year, are playing their best ball right now. They're motivated by a lot. You know, they got the Pujols home run chase happening, which, by the way, before we wrap up the show, he's at 697. He is so close. Obviously, Luke touched on Wainwright and Molina breaking the record for their 325th start as a battery today. A lot to be excited about in Cardinals Nation. I think that's going to propel them to continue to win the division. And the Brewers aren't looking at the wild card. The teams with the records, the wild card, are really just so good. Philly is the other team right now. And they're
last
leading.
One for today, I was going to say Philly.
Not done, sadly.
If Bryce can stay hot.
One yard today.
He did, yes. And it's 3-1?
Yep, 3-1.
3-1. Philly are going to have 80 wins if they hold on to win this game. They're going to have 80 wins this season. They're going to get above – they got above 500 last year, but that was 82-80. They're going to get, you know, above 500, above
62 if they
above 500 this season, and that's a big stepping stone for them. It's been a rough decade. They had the botched rebuild that Harper being the gem of that, he's shown why. And I think that Philly is not necessarily going to be a success story this season. I mean, it's postseason, they could shock people.
Yeah.
But I don't see it happening this year.
Yeah, I think they're wild card cannon fodder. That's why I think they might win their wild card series if they don't play the first seed.
If they have to play at the Braves, they might get swept.
Yeah.
I agree with that. That is.
They do not win at Citizens Bank Park. Or not Citizens Bank, excuse me. At Truist Park. That's totally a foul on my part, folks.
Different bank.
Yeah, that's true. But I was at the game opening day in 2018 when the Phillies had a 5-0 lead in the sixth inning and blew it. And I maintain that was the fault of Hector Neris, who is one of the worst relievers in baseball from a closing perspective. Am I wrong?
No, definitely not wrong.
So
Aldis Chapman's kind of getting up there, but
oh yeah. Hey, when he gave up that, I went to the game in Baltimore, and there was in July. There was a guy next to me in my seat on Friday night. I'm on all 3 days. And he knew all the Yankees players, all their names, but he didn't know much about baseball at all. which to me was an odd combination. But when Chapman came in and gave up a three-run jack to Anthony Santander, that dude was pressed.
All right, I'd like to just touch up on scores, and then I'd like to ask you guys one final question before we wrap it up. All right, so Yankees on top of the Red Sox, 3-1 in the top of the sixth. Phillies, 3-1 on top of the Marlins, top of the seventh. Orioles are down to the Nationals in the top of the seventh, 2-1. Blue Jays take a 5-1 lead over the Rays in the top of the seventh inning. Cubs still lead the Mets 6-1 in the bottom of the fifth. Royals down 3-0 to the Twins in the top of the fifth inning. Cardinals take a 2-1 lead over the Brewers in the bottom of the third inning. Runner on second there. Rangers jump 4-1 over the Athletics top of the third inning. And that wraps it up. One thing I wanted to ask you guys, we talked about our AL and NL players of the week. Who is your prediction for this next week? And we'll touch up on it when we come back next week.
Oh, that's a good thought.
Yes. It looks like I'm getting the kind of like thrust into this. Possible. I'm just trying to think of
seriously. I'm going to go with Aaron Judge. You can't go wrong
yeah.
there.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say that. I'll take the bait on that one for the AL at least. NL, I'm just trying to think. What's the Braves play? Who are the people playing?
NL side, I'm going to go with. Yeah, who's going to win the NL MVP? Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, Cardinals are still competing, trying to, you know, lock up it up.
Division,
but
yeah.
I think I'm going to go with the two MVPs as mine. Safe picks, I'd say.
I think that the teams that are going to show out in the postseason are going to really ramp it into high gear this week. So with that being said, I'm going to name pitchers.
Okay.
Because that's the key.
Speaking of pitchers, I'll make my NL pick right now. Max Fried is due tomorrow.
I love it. I love it, guys.
All right, I'll take Max Fried.
I'll agree with Max Fried, and then for the American League Player of the Week, this is a toss up, but I'm gonna still go Mike Trout. You can't go wrong riding with the best player in baseball. Aaron Judge, honorable mention. That is going to wrap up this second edition of Student Section MLB. We thank you so much for joining us, and we will be right back with you on next Wednesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Central Time, right here on WVUA 90.7, the Capstone. Good night, Tuscaloosa.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.